Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hello, folks. My name is Lynn, and I am your host for Talking Twilight Zone, and today I'm joined by two of my co-hosts, Bobby Neer and Dave Cooper. Hello, guys.
Hello, America.
However, yes. Our other wonderful co-host, Robert, was unable to make it for the show today. And although he'll be missed, I know he'll be here in spirit, and he'll also edit his comments into the show later this weekend. But we do have Bobby, and we do have Dave. Hello, Dave.
All right, good to be here. Yep.
Oh, great. Our episode today is titled A Penny for Your Thoughts, starring Dick York.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Mr. Hector B. Poole, resident of the Twilight Zone. Flip a coin and keep flipping it. What are the odds? Half the time it'll come up heads, half the time tails. But in one freakish chance in a million, it'll land on its edge. Mr. Hector B. Poole, a bright human coin on his way to the bank.
And this story, written by George Clayton Johnson, is about a bank clerk named Hector Poole, who, when buying a newspaper on his way to work one morning, throws a quarter onto the newsstand to pay for it, and the quarter lands upright on its edge, much to the astonishment of the newspaper boy and to Poole himself. So after that, Hector finds that he has the ability to read people's minds. He goes to the bank, and he's able to hear everyone's thoughts, some good, some bad. And he even gets into trouble with his boss over his knowledge of one customer's intent to use his bank loan to bet on the horses. But after overhearing a longtime and well-respected bank employee named Mr. Spithers fantasizing about robbing the bank vault that very afternoon, Poole feels that he has to report what he knows to his boss, who alerts the security guard. So as Smithers returns from the vault at the end of the day and tries to leave the bank, he's stopped and searched, but nothing's found. Hector's fired for his screw-up, and Smithers, who can't figure out how Hector knew, tells him that he's always fantasized and dreamed of robbing the bank, but it's never been anything more than a fantasy, and he could never, ever go through with it. Anyway, during the whole day, this entire day, the blonde secretary, Miss Turner, she's been letting Hector know through her thoughts that she's got a thing for him. And before he leaves, he listens to her final thoughts. And Poole manages to get his job back with a promotion and even gets a cruise thrown in for Mr. Smithers. So on his way home, he stops for another paper, throws another quarter, and knocks down the one he set on its edge that morning. And his ability to read minds suddenly disappears. He's absolutely thrilled, and he walks off with Miss Turner. And that is the whole story. Now, I'm afraid my rating for this episode includes a little bit of prejudice. In my opinion, A Penny for Your Thoughts was a rather silly episode. To me, it wasn't really Twilight Zone material. And unfortunately, Dick York annoyed me throughout this entire episode. That's where my prejudice comes in. That's the prejudice part. I've never been a Dick York fan. I didn't like him much in Bewitched, although his character and demeanor were perfect for that role in, you know, the fact that he was a constant target for Agnes Moorehead's Endora character. You know, she was always torturing him and everything, and his dorky demeanor, that was perfect for that. But however, his role of Hector Poole in this episode and the story itself simply didn't appeal to me. First of all, if you gain the ability to read minds, you don't constantly walk up to people and ask them questions about what you hear them thinking. They look at you like you're a lunatic, and that's just what they did to him. That's just what they did to Hector. I thought he was going to get slugged a couple of times, and he should have. Every time he did that, I wanted to swat him with something. He was acting like a first-class a-hole. How dumb can you be? And also, I was surprised that he actually took Mr. Smithers' thoughts seriously. Now, if he thought the old fellow was going to do something as irrational and crazy as robbing the bank and taking off for Bermuda, Wouldn't he have done that while he was a much younger man and able to fully enjoy himself? I mean, his age was never given, but he obviously looked like he was in his 70s. And the other thing, first of all, the quarter that was thrown, when he threw that quarter, it didn't stand on its edge. If you really look at the episode in the beginning, it did not stand on its edge. It was leaning against other coins. It was leaning up against other coins. It was not standing on its edge. So that was silly. And I suppose what irritated me more than anything about this episode was how stupidly Hector behaved at the end when the situation reversed itself. He began rushing up to perfect strangers, walking along the sidewalk, grabbing them, staring into their faces in an attempt to hear them think. Now, come on, give me a break. In reality, if a man did that to another man just out of the blue, he'd be lucky if the man he grabbed didn't punch him in the face. If he did that to a woman, as Hector did, the woman would probably scream or call for a policeman. I mean, I sure would. I'd probably think it was an attacker trying to harm me or rob me. He might get a knee in the groin along with some dirty looks. But now I know there are Dick York fans out there who would love to smack me because they think he's just wonderful in anything he does. But I've never cared for him and found him truly annoying in this episode and anything he's ever done. With his goofy facial expressions, his big ears, his monkey face, he always acts like a dork. And, you know, I just don't like him, so I guess there's a little prejudice. But, you know, the episode I didn't care for, but Dick York I definitely don't care for. Now, I did find Mr. Smithers to be a charming character. He was played by the wonderful character actor Cyril Delavante, who lived to be 88 years old. He was only 64 when he appeared in A Penny for Your Thoughts, but he certainly looked older than that. And Delavante appeared in a total of 4 Twilight Zone episodes, and he was in movies and numerous television series up until 1 year before his death. So anyway, as far as the premise of the story itself, I do believe that unlike Hector, I would keep my special gift of mind reading to myself because I have no doubt it would affect my relationships with friends. It would definitely affect relationships with friends, family, coworkers in some ways. And I'm sure it would be a mix of good and not so good results, but it's not an ability that I would readily wish for if I had the choice. I don't think I'd want to read people's minds. Sometimes it's best not to know some things. I mean, we recently reviewed the episode The Whole Truth, which is a little bit like the story, in that the man, you know, he's unable to lie, and he can only speak the truth and his honest thoughts. I was good and bad in that scenario as well. And I agree with the old adage in that what you don't know won't hurt you. That may not be 100% true, but I'm okay with it. And even though I don't like Dick York, if another actor had played the role, I still wouldn't like the story. So my rating for this episode is a 1 for poor. And I'm going to give this over to Bobby for his thoughts on it.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Let me just start out by saying that I'm really terribly disappointed today because for weeks now, people have assured me that the world was coming to an end today and I would not have to review this episode. And much to my disappointment, we're all still alive, so I'm going to end up having to comment on it anyway. And that is disappointing. It's simply a lousy story, top to bottom. It's another one of those Twilight Zone stories, of which there are too many, that where the premise is better than the execution. The idea of people being able to read each other's minds is really interesting, but they didn't do anything with it because the ramifications in society would be quite remarkable if you no longer had any private thoughts because people just about never say what's really on their minds or they would be big trouble. So that's a more interesting story. Now, Lynn and I watched this episode a few hours ago. And on the DVD in the extra section for this episode, the writer claimed that he realized from the beginning that it was just a silly little comedy. And I don't know what he's talking about because I didn't think it was funny at all. So he may have intended it to be amusing, but I failed to see the humor in it. And there's simply nothing going on here at all. Absolutely nothing. And like I say all the time about episodes I don't particularly like, I don't have any problem with Dick York. I never was crazy about him, but he doesn't bother me the way he does Lynn. But well, I don't like his character in the story. He's not interesting in any way. So, you know, it's just nothing. I think they should have done it as a more serious story. Excuse me. As a more serious story to show what can happen in the world if suddenly people could hear each other's thoughts or know what people are really thinking that and how different it is from what they're saying. Of course, that would have a better use today this year than it did in 1960 or whenever this episode was filmed, because we're just entering a presidential race. And it would be nice if we could really know what all these candidates are thinking rather than what they are saying. that may get us a better president in the long run, although I'm not sure anybody would qualify under those conditions. Of course, we would have known that Donald Trump had absolutely no intention of running for president. He was just getting publicity. Of course, you don't need that for everybody, because Newt Gingrich is putting his foot in his mouth over and over again, so we don't really have to know what he's actually thinking. But I can see where it would have its a good use today. But back then or at any other time, no, there's nothing to be gained by it at all. You walk around all day, you talk to people, you talk to your friends, you know, and you may think from time to time things that you know are going to hurt them. So you would never tell them the truth. The whole bank robbery bit with the little old man who was thinking about robbing the bank, that doesn't impress me at all. He looks too frail to be robbing any banks. I don't buy that for a minute. He may have been fantasizing about it, but he wasn't about to ever do it. He doesn't look like the type. So it just is nowhere. And I certainly agree with Lynn that if you went up on the street and started staring in people's faces and trying to listen to them, they would have you carted off in short order. So I believe on the message board, on the board, I think I gave it a 1 also, or a 0, I'm not sure. It does nothing for me. It's slow moving, and I agree with Lynn that it doesn't matter whether Dick York is in it or anybody's in it. It would not have improved it in the least. So I don't have to have anybody read my mind. I'll tell you out front, I think it stinks. It gets absolutely nothing for me. I don't like it at all. All right, on to Dave, I guess.
Yeah, to Dave.
Well, I certainly agree with you on one thing, on more than one thing, but the idea that the premise of the story is better than the execution. I certainly do agree with you totally on that. It was fluffed up a little bit more. We had stereotypical people, you know, the policeman who doesn't really want to use his gun. He's pleased that the day's gone by and he's never had to draw his gun again. The young lady who, what was probably considered a woman nearing the age of being a spinster, watering the flowers and wondering why she's never noticed by anybody. And as you said, the man fancifully dreaming that he'll show him one day and he'll take it out. I believe actually the actor was only 62, born in 1899.
Cyril Delavante?
Born in... Hang on a minute. Tell him the guy. He was born in 1889, which would make him 72, actually, not 62. So I got that wrong. Because I was going to comment that I think people did look old in those days, especially if they'd been heavy smokers. It would tend to show. But quite a few things to comment. I actually quite enjoyed it as an episode. I do agree with Lynn. There was a bit of a cheat with the coin. I mean, it really didn't stand up on its own. It fell against a couple of other coins, and that was what was propping it up. So it wasn't really that much of a miracle. I think it should really... they should have done it with some sort of freeze frame technique where it actually seemed to be standing on its own. I think that would be much more impressive and much more likely that the newspaper guy would be impressed and would have commented on it. Because without
They could have done something, don't you think, Dave? They could have done something back then to make it look like, I mean, anything with the camera work to make it stand by itself.
Well, all we need to do is get people to toss it 10, 15 times and sue the one time where at one point, all right, it wouldn't stand up, it would flip over, but freeze the frame at the upright. But yeah. So that was that. I haven't really got a lot to actually add about story to say, except to say that I actually quite enjoyed it. I don't think it was demanding. It was certainly a very, storm in a teacup type of story. But for all that, I actually found that I had a kind feeling for it, and I quite enjoyed it. Even though you could have, from sort of the first frames of it, you could guess how it was going to pan out. Although in actual fact, at least this man was, not using it for his own selfish gains. I mean, even the thought of squeezing a promotion out of his bank manager wasn't his thought. That was the girlfriend's, the possible girlfriend's thought. All he wanted to do was to give the old man his holiday, as you said, and get his job back. He wasn't trying to sort of pressurise him. So, you know, it was a nice, simple story. But I do take Bobby's point. It could have been quite a lot more. The idea has been used later on, and I'm sure since Robert isn't here, I ought to mention it. There's a good episode of Buffy in Series 3. It's called Earshot, where Buffy gained the ability to hear what was going on about it. And she kept hearing things about somebody in the Sunnydale High was going to massacre students. And in actual fact, I've got a feeling that this episode was quite controversial, because when it was originally going to go out, it wasn't the Columbine disaster where the students killed.
It wasn't shown because of the Columbine.
It was the Columbine. Oh, thank you. Well, yeah. Thanks. I knew it was something had happened, some shootings, and they had to delay showing that episode because it was a little bit near the nerve of the fact that somebody was going up into this tower with a gun.
They never showed it in America, as far as I know.
Did they never show it? It's certainly on the DVD sets, so I'm sure Robert would have definitely mentioned that, and probably Rick Wall coming after me would have. And the other thing is the Mel Gibson movie, Lynn. I don't think you know the one. It's called What Women Want.
Yeah.
Comedy. Around 2000. In the year 2000, where he plays this advertising executive and Helen Hunt is somebody brought in to sort of basically take over and be his boss, the job he thought he got. And then he takes these products home and he thinks, I've got to really do something here, because he's considered a bit of a macho man and they're all women makeup. So he's separated from his wife. He has this teenage daughter who thinks her dad's useless. And while she's out, he puts all this face makeup on and tries the girl's tights on, and he's playing with all the stuff, and he's got a hairdryer there, and he tips over the bath, he sort of electrocutes himself, but not, it doesn't kill him, but he wakes up and he can hear everybody talking, and then of course he uses it to his advantages. I don't know whether it's been directly related to that. Apparently, from what Wiki says, it was actually a TV series called What Women Want First. So it'd been in Australia, Malaysia and China. But I've got a feeling that whoever wrote it must have seen or subconsciously thought about this particular episode. And I agree with you as well, Lynn, that, again, we have this thing of him using every story twice. And the one about the cars and the people having to say the truth. In a way, you're not reading their minds. The trick was in that the people almost have to tell you what they're thinking. So it's that one where he always seems to get a story twice. He always manages to get two slices out of the one piece. So he's good at that. What else? One other interesting thing is that Hayden Rourke, and let me just get which character he played. He played Mr. Snikes, the man that was going to take the loan, and that would have got them all the sack because he spent all the money.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, Dick York. Both of them turned up in very similar shows, because Hayden Rourke turned up in a TV series called I Dream of Jeannie.
Yeah, he played Larry Hagman's superior. Yeah.
Yeah, and Dick York, of course, in Bewitched. So it seems interesting that they both came up into very similar roles. Of course, Dick York had quite a bad accident when he was on a film, and his career really was slightly curtailed from what it might well have been. Although I do take on board that he had a rather goofy look that may well have limited him to this sort of comedy role anyway.
Oh, he was such a dork. I mean, the guy was so dorky looking. And I could never picture Elizabeth Montgomery being married to this guy. I mean, no, I'm not saying that because she was good looking that he had to be gorgeous, but it just I just couldn't picture him. He was so dorky and she was so cool, and I just couldn't see them together. I more could see Dick Sargent as her husband in later, you know, episodes when Dick York left and Dick Sargent took over. I mean, I could see them together. I couldn't see her with Dick York. I just couldn't.
Yeah. As we say, I think she was out of his league, really.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Bit harsh, but there's the truth.
Well, he was. I mean, come on. I mean,
so basically, I mean, this was, I mean, it's one of those where, again, it's done all on, virtually all on one set, except the street scene. Could easily be done as a little, almost a light-hearted play. So, again, I take Bobby's thought that it's not really, you know, scary enough or mysterious enough to be a proper Twilight episode. But the scene, as we've found, as we've worked through season two, there's been a number of these sort of comedy ones, haven't there? There was the one with the camera that seemed to be played for laughs. Even the car one, really. I mean, so I don't know whether there'd been this element of, you know, you can't keep having, you know, end-of-the-world type stories or aliens coming, and we have to lighten these up with almost little morality plays, which, and then, that's a cue for Rick Wall, isn't it? Because he's going to say that basically that's what Twilight Zones are, morality plays. So perhaps I'd better stop there and let you pass on to the next person.
Go ahead, Rick. Let's hear what you have to say, Rick.
Am I not predictable?
And I want to apologize for being late. I had to run out and get some dinner at Mickey.
Oh, no, no, no. We're just glad you're here. We're always glad to see you.
Anyway, you know what, guys? I kind of agree with you.
Wow! Oh,
let's see. What could they have done? Could they have used CGI to make... No, wait a minute. CGI wasn't even invented back then. How about
freeze,
motion...
Freeze frame. Freeze frame.
That's all they had to do.
But anyway, on a serious point, I do disagree with you. If I heard people's thoughts, I'd go up and confront them, too, if they were thinking something I didn't like or shouldn't like or whatever.
Well, what do you expect from them? They don't know what's going on.
Yeah, you're not exactly going to get a thank you for it, are you? That's the point.
Yeah, if you went up to somebody that you heard their thoughts and you went up to them and you said, suppose somebody was saying, I think you're an idiot, and they're thinking that, I think you're an idiot. Would you go up and say, oh, you think I'm an idiot? I mean, they'd be looking at you like, what would you say to them?
I do that all the time. I do that all the time, and people do think I'm an idiot, so what's the point?
But would you actually tell them that you heard them think that? Would you tell them?
Yes.
Okay, so you would tell them that you can read their mind, right? Okay, that's different. See, he didn't do that. In the episode, he didn't do that. He was going up to people, and someone would think something, and he'd make a comment on it, and they were looking at him like he was a nut. Now, you know, why didn't he just say, look, I can read your mind. I know that you just thought that, you know, the Mets need pitching or whatever that guy was thinking, something about baseball. You know, just say something. But he
didn't say
anything.
I think it was hitting.
What?
I think it was hitting, but that's besides the point.
But he didn't say anything. He didn't even comment on that, the fact that he knew what they were thinking. So you would do it, right? You would say that you knew?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you agree that it could have been a better story, or did you quite enjoy it?
Yeah, it was all right for a light comedy, which it most likely was.
Yeah.
But it was
the writer wrote it. The writer wrote it the wrong way. It should have been done the other way. Instead of him hearing what everybody else was thinking, everybody else should have realized what he was thinking. Would have been a more interesting story.
because he's a dork.
I'm serious. I'm not trying to be funny. I'm serious about that. Would have been more interesting because he wouldn't be able to control his thoughts. He'd be getting in a lot of trouble.
Well, are we sure that there wasn't a Twilight episode that did that? I mean, I don't know them off by heart, but it might well have featured in one of the other stories later. But you guys know it much better than me.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure which one would have, and I'm not sure if there was one that actually did that. I'm sure there were, because they repeated so many episodes.
As for people using themes of stories, that's used quite often right now. Dave, Russell T. Davies did it a lot with the zombie-like beings in Doctor Who.
They did it with the Ood. The Ood seemed to have this sort of...
Right. How about the story with the, I forget the title of it, but the Zagaroth taking over the station, the space station.
Oh.
And the Sarah Jane reunion episode at the school, the kids kind of became zombies.
School reunion, yeah, but they didn't read the minds, but...
I'm just using this as an example of people using elements of stories. I'm not using that particular thing, but I'm using the CSI, Law and Order. They're all formula. They all use basically the same storyline or elements. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So what if Twilight Zone did it before anything else? I mean, and besides, tell me, is there anything really original? Any stories that are really original? If there were, they were used by somebody. What's his name now?
William Shakespeare?
Yeah. And
William
the Bible.
Shakespeare.
and stuff like that. So, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure William Shakespeare did all these stories at some point. I don't know. But let me ask you a question, Rick. If some guy walked up to you on the street, grabbed you by the shoulders, and just grabbed you real hard by your shoulders and looked in your eyes, what would you do?
Nothing. Well, keep on walking.
No, he grabbed you, man. You can't walk because he grabbed you.
I'm a New Yorker. I'll keep walking.
You're not going to kick him in the groin, because I would.
No.
All right. Well, you're nicer than I.
Don't mess with Lynn.
And I'm telling you, that man would be speaking in a high voice.
he'll be under my feet if he doesn't move, but I'll just keep walking. I'm not going to do anything to him unless, like I said, unless he's under my feet. Then I'll step on him.
Hey, Rick, we have guest number 5 here, and he says a New Yorker would kick him. That's right. That's right, guest number 5. Yes, a Philadelphian would kick him, too. You grab me by my shoulders, you're going to get a knee in the groin. You're going to be talking soprano for a long time. I don't know.
Well, I'm 6'3", about 210, 220 pounds, so.
Well, you're okay, then. But you can knock the guy right over. You can knock the guy right over.
Yep.
I don't know. I mean, the episode, it was a cute comedy or silly comedy. I don't even know if I want to call it cute. I'm going to say it was a silly comedy. And to me, it did not seem like a Twilight Zone episode. And, you know, I'm even going to put my prejudice of Dick York aside because I can't say enough how much I don't like Dick York, but if you would put, I mean, my favorite actor of all time is Charlton Heston. If you put Charlton Heston in this episode, I'd still hate the episode. I would say, well, you know, Charlton Heston was okay in it, but I'd hate the episode. So, you know, I wouldn't be so hard on the actor, but I'd be hard on the episode. In this case, I'm hard on both the actor and the episode because I don't like Dick York. But, you know, I mean, that's all I can say about it.
Yeah, I think it was a fairly simple story, simply told. Bit of fluff, really. Having said all that, I actually quite enjoyed watching it, rewatching it.
So you didn't mind the story? You didn't mind the story?
No, I think the idea was underused, certainly, but it was, I suppose, casting Dick York in that character, that was the only way it could play out, you know, the nice man who had the upper hand, and he still really couldn't take advantage of it. And only did so on the prompting of the woman who thought, not only does she want this fella, but she's going to make something of him as well.
Well, in a way, it was good casting because she wanted some kind of a mild-mannered, dorky kind of guy who was afraid of his own shadow almost, you know. And you wanted this timid type of guy. So Dick York, I guess, was good for that. And as far as the woman, you know, she was a rather frumpy-looking woman. I mean, not that she was unattractive, but she was very frumpy. And, you know, I guess you couldn't have a really gorgeous woman in that role. You couldn't have somebody, you know, that looked like a model, because she would never go for somebody like Dick York. He was dorky, he was frump, he was kind of, you know, absent-minded. I don't know how to describe him, but you'd have to have kind of a frumpy-looking woman going for kind of a dorky-looking guy, and it worked out as far as the casting goes. But, you know, I can't see anybody else in those roles. What do you think, Rick? Did you see anybody else in those roles?
Maybe Burgess, but they used them too many times already.
Who?
Burgess.
Burgess, what? Not, in Dick York's role?
Yeah.
No.
Burgess
was too old to play that role. No.
The only person I could think could play it was somebody like Christopher Reeve playing this sort of Clark Kent persona.
Yeah, but he wasn't born yet.
I know, but that mild-mannered... I don't actually mean Christopher Reeve as much as... it's more of a Clark Kent character, isn't it?
Actually, well, Chris was born then, but that's besides the point.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, because I was born in 1959. So I think Christopher... Yeah, he was. But how about William Shatner? Too good-looking for that role?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely too good-looking for that role. You needed a dorky type of guy.
Whoa, I don't know. Wally Cox, maybe? Well, he's darky looking. And he was in one.
That's perfect. Oh, my God. I'm going to stop laughing here. That's great. That is good. Bobby, can you see anybody in this role?
No, I just wanted to go away.
I like Wally Cox. That's perfect. Oh, my God. Thank you, Rick. Thank you for that.
Hey, but, you wanted dorky looking. I mean, come on.
It doesn't get any better than that. You're right.
Nope.
Oh, that would have been perfect. Well, anyway, okay, I think we all agree that this was kind of more of a comedy episode than anything else. This wasn't really a Twilight Zone feel to it, you know, didn't have that Twilight Zone atmosphere, whatever. And, you know, I still give it a one rating, a poor rating. But, you know, as far as a comedy, as far as a cutesy episode, yeah, there you go. But that's about all I can see from it. But we do have another one coming up 2 weeks from now on June 4th called 22. Has more of a Twilight Zone feel to it. And that I forget who that is starring now. Barbara Nichols, I believe. Barbara Nichols is in that episode. And, thank you, Dave. So that is coming up. Dave just posted something on that. Yes, that's coming up. Barbara Nichols, I believe, is in that episode 2 weeks from now on June 4th. So I'm hoping that everyone else will be back here. Everyone who's here today will be back here on June 4th for that wonderful discussion that we'll be having then. So anybody else have anything else to add on this one?
Nope.
I didn't give it a rating. I'd say two and a half maybe.
Oh, okay, 2.5 for Dave. All right, how about you, Rick?
2.
All right, that's cool. Okay, so I give it a 1. Bobby, what do you give it?
0.
Oh, 0 from Bobby. Okay, I'll be nice and give it a 1, even though I can't stand Dick York. Okay, I'm giving it a 1. We got a 2 from Rick, and we got a 2.5 from Dave. Awesome. And Robert is going to be inputting his comments later this weekend. Unfortunately, he couldn't join us today for a family engagement, but he will be inputting our music and his comments.
Hi, everybody. I guess I'm going last today. This is Robert. Today, I couldn't make today's show, so I do apologize, but I wanted to give a few thoughts, so to say, for a penny for your thoughts, or it could be a dime, you know, the way inflation is today. Basically, the story is about Hector, who on a flip of a coin gets the ability to read minds. But the thing is, the coin that he puts in the newspaper box doesn't go all the way down. So it's neither head nor tails. It was pretty much putting probability on hold. He notices bit by bit that he hears people. He thinks they're talking, but then he realizes the mouths aren't moving. Gets hit by a car. Can read that person's thought. And then he goes over to the bank where he works at and having the same situation there. Overhearing a customer at the bank where he works at talking about his loan and how he was going to use it on the horses to pay back what he embezzled from his company, which kind of gets Hector in trouble, but it gets made up for at the end of the episode because it's found out that he really was using the money to play on the horses. So another situation too, he went around to the different customers and listened to their thoughts, except for when he got to this one blonde girl and couldn't read any thoughts. So, was this a Twilight Zone joke? I kind of thought of my own blonde joke. And it goes something like this. How many blondes does it take to put in a light bulb? Well, it takes three. It's one to read the instruction book, one to take out the bulb and put the bulb in, and the third one to turn the ladder to screw or unscrew the bulb while changing it. Yep, something like that. Anyway, besides that, he notices that his other co-worker at the bank, Miss Turner, kind of been admiring him for a long time. And you always hear her thought going, poor Mr. Poole, she would be thinking. She kind of helps Hector gain confidence, and he confides in her about the gift that he has. So she pretty much tells him he needs to stand up to his boss, be a man and not a mouse, so to say. Meanwhile, he hears a conversation that an old employee, Mr. Smithers, is thinking. And he's thinking about stealing money from the bank. And he goes through the process of how he's going to do it. So Hector tells his boss, and his boss alerts the security guard. And then when it happens, he goes and looks inside the employee's bag and finds only books. And Smithers tells him that, you know, it's a scenario that I run through my mind of someday I'm going to do this, you know, rob the bank, go to all these different places I always wanted to go. But he admits at the end he's a coward and was only thinking of doing it for years. But it kind of concludes at the end. The guy gets the girl. He improves his life by threatening to tell what he knows about the illicit affair he's having with a mistress the boss is having. And so he improves his life by getting a better position in the bank, besides getting his job back. And he helps the old man in the end, give him a vacation. One of the conditions was the man get a airplane ticket. So it all worked out. So, and the story ends pretty much, well, you know, he don't need the power anymore, so we're back at the newspaper stand. He has Miss Turner with him, flips the coin again into the box and knocks it over. So he loses his power just like that. Interesting. You know, also, what is the odds of being able to keep that coin up in that coin box like that all day long? You know, if he's working an 8-hour job, eventually that coin's gonna have to fall over. Kind of convenient that it stayed like that. Dick York is an okay actor to me. I mean, I liked him in the television show Bewitched as Darren Stevens, until Dick Sargent took over later on. A few things that this reminded me of, basically a Buffy episode called Earshot from Season 3, Episode 52.
She can read our minds, our every impulse and fantasy.
The ability to read minds is a powerful gift.
God, Xander, is that all you think about?
Actually, bye.
But with that power comes a price.
If it doesn't go away, she'll go insane.
An all-new Buffy.
I've got laundry.
Why are you...
You had sex with Giles? You had sex with Giles?
It was the candy. We were teenagers on the hood of a police car. I'll be downstairs. You feel better.
Twice?
Where Buffy kills a telepathic demon, and the blood from the demon gives her the ability to read people's minds. But unfortunately, the power grows worse because she can't control it, because she gets all these thoughts coming all at once and they're killing her. So Giles has to come up with a antidote to help Buffy in that episode. Also, Matt Parkman, the character of Heroes, he had the ability to read people's thoughts as well.
I heard about this, and they sent it to me, and I read it, and it just blew me away. But first, it comes with a map and all these drawings, which usually means that the writing sucks, and you have to, like, get the attention away from the writing. This captivated me from the minute I read it, and my wife read it, and she just, we freaked out. But it was only an hour long. It wasn't a two-hour pilot, and my character didn't exist. So I said, I'm like, I am the perfect Peter Petrelli. And I just worked with David Semel on House, and so he was directing the pilot. So I called David up and I said, David, I'm coming to see you tomorrow. I'm going to read. I'm going to be Peter, man. It's going to be great. It was like that commercial where it's like, I heard nothing. I heard nothing. I was like, what? And he said, you couldn't be less right for this role. But I said, I'm going to come in and I'm going to do my best. And sure enough, I came in and Tim was there and Dennis and David Semel was there. And I could see that something was brewing. Like, Tim was like, you know, up on his chair and like looking, watching me. And I don't know what was going on. And sure enough, as I was driving home, they said, good news, bad news. Bad news, you're terrible for that role. But there's another role. We're sending the script to your house. And hope if NBC gets behind it, we'd love you to consider playing this cop. And when I read it, I just love everything about it. I just think it's an emotional character, and the power is really cool and identifiable, even though it's, you know, it's fantasy. It's something that, I mean, I get people coming up to me all the time. You know, what am I thinking?
And probably a little known show that a lot of people don't know. It was on for 4 seasons back in the 80s. The TV series is called Out of This World, where a character called Evie, who happens to be half alien, half human, and she lives on Earth with her mother. The father kind of travels back and forth between a different planet. And one of the powers that she has is telepathic powers. Communicates to her father by a device called a cube that would open up and he would talk to her in the show. And actually, who did the voice of the cube? None other than Burt Reynolds himself. Also, I was thinking the movie Firestarter, which I think it was David Keefe character, was able to influence people's minds. Kind of a telepathic situation in that movie.
Bring her to me. You're blind.
Ah! My eyes! Ah! Oh!
You took her. You killed my wife. You're blind.
Ah! Ah! My eyes! My eyes! My eyes! Oh, God! My eyes! Ah! Ah! Andy! My eyes!
Joan? Go back inside the house. You won't remember any of this.
Leon! Oh, my God! Oh, God!
Where are we gonna go now?
Well, we're gonna have to find someplace to stay for a while. I don't know if anybody will believe us, but if we send letters to the important newspapers, maybe the shop will have to lay off.
We could go to Grandpa's.
And what made you think of that?
I don't know.
Because I was just thinking about your grandfather not 5 minutes ago.
Well, that's pretty much all I have to say. I give a rating of 2 out of 5 for this on the Darren meter.
Sam.
Hopefully, I'll be on the next show in a couple weeks. Talk to you later. Bye, everybody.
2 weeks from now, on June 4th, we will be doing 22. So, everybody, I hope to see you then. And thank you for coming today, and have a great rest of the weekend. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Cheers.